From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. What's new, Tom?
Well, it's not that new, but it's Friday again. I'm looking forward to taking the rest of the afternoon off.
What's new is that we have a guest in studio today who graces us with his presence every now and then, but as far as I know, has never invited us to the governor's mansion for beer.
I knew I was going to bring that up as one of the first items. You
know. Yes.
But, you know, I suspect he would invite you, but you didn't have to drive down to Richmond, and you don't have a car
well,
to drive
you. He invites
down.
So many people. It wouldn't be that special. Of course, we're talking about the governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe. He joins us in studio. He's a Democrat who previously served as chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Governor McAuliffe, good to see you. Thank you for
joining
us.
You and Tom, let me be crystal clear. I live in the oldest continuously lived in governor's mansion in America. 1813 it was built. I'm proud to say the first governor to actually put a kegerator in the governor's mansion. I did it to close the Stone Brewery deal, which we lured back to Virginia, back to Richmond, Virginia. Now we have 24/7. You're invited anytime you want. We have Virginia craft beers. I just opened our 121st craft brewery. As you probably know, I'm the first governor to visit all community colleges in Virginia. I will be the first governor to visit all 36 state parks. And I'm doing my best to be the first governor to visit every craft brewery.
Tom tells me that if we drink beer from that kegerator, it will compromise our objectivity.
This is how old I am. I have not been in the governor's mansion since the early 80s with Chuck and Linda Robb, in which he served us broccoli. And it spilled some rose or something onto the table. And she said, oh, broccoli, it's the scrub brush of the intestines. Which is true, but not what you want to hear when you're about to eat it.
No. If you have questions or comments for Governor
McAuliffe,
call us
at
800-433-8850, 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org, or better yet, go to our website, kojoshow.org, and watch the live video stream of this broadcast. You can also send us a tweet at Kojo Show. Before we start talking to the governor about Virginia, a little bit about what's been going on here in Washington. There's a new U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. He has been selected. He is Channing D. Phillips. And for those of us who have been here for a very long time, Tom, why is that name so familiar?
Because you might have known of Channing E. Phillips, his father, who was the first African American ever nominated for president.
Back in 1968, his father, Channing Phillips, led the Washington, D.C. delegation to the Democratic National Convention. They were pledged to support Robert F. Kennedy, but since he was deceased, they decided to nominate Channing Phillips as a favorite son of the District of Columbia, making him the first African American to be nominated.
When was Julian Bond nominated? He was nominated one year also. I can't remember.
It might have been before that, but a lot of people feel that Channing Phillips was the first nominated, so that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
The son,
Channing D. Phillips, is now going to be the U.S. attorney for the district.
Well, you're assuming the Senate will act. You know, it's entirely possible. The Senate, the president, let's tell people what we're talking about. Yesterday, the White House nominated six people across the country to be new U.S. attorneys in
Sherwood
country.
Broke the story on Twitter.
I broke the one about Channing. And now those nominations go to the Senate, where the Senate may or may not act on them in the presidential year. I suspect that Channing will be named acting U.S. attorney. He'll take over, but he may be acting for the entire time he's there. But he's got 16 years in the U.S. attorney's office here. Eric Holder brought him over to the Justice Department back in 2011. He's a native Washingtonian. He has both the federal and local experience. Eleanor Holmes Norton nominated him. And everybody thinks that he's going to do a very good job. You know, this is the biggest U.S. attorney's office, I think, in the country. It's like 350 lawyers. They do a lot of the international terrorism, international crime, national crimes. Plus, they're our little courthouse for major crimes in the District of Columbia. So it's a pretty wide, broad portfolio. And if you know Channing, he's about as quiet as you can possibly think of someone being. He's very mild-mannered. In fact, he's too damn polite. Governor, you'll like it. He's a graduate of the University of Virginia and Howard Law School. So he's got to come in. For all the national, international things, in Washington, what we care is that he's got to decide
whether or not he is going to bring charges against the former mayor of the District of Columbia, Vincent Gray, or drop the case.
Right. Political sources say that Eleanor Holmes Norton, who, like a senator from places where we have real democracy, she gets, as the delegate, to nominate when Democrats are in power, who should be various things. And she said she privately has said several times, I want this case decided. Indict someone, don't indict him. Whatever the facts are, just do it. It's been over four years. Let's have some resolution of this. Now, she'll tell you that's not the only reason that Vinnie Cohen, the acting U.S. attorney now, wasn't picked. But I do know there's high frustration in the city that this is a major political scandal hanging over the city. It needs to be taken care of.
We move on to...
Not every answer will be that long today.
Oh, yes. They won't be because...
But this
we
is
do
a huge
to,
deal.
We have to get Governor McAuliffe to talk specifically about Virginia. But before he does, this might be on your future wish list, Governor McAuliffe. Here in the District of Columbia, 7 of the council's 13 members co-introduced a proposed law this past Tuesday that would give every D.C. resident as much as 16 weeks of paid family leave if they have a family business to attend to, whether it's caring for a sick relative or a new baby coming into the family. This was done after the federal government or the White House provided some funding for a study by the Labor Department. And so if it occurs, the District of Columbia would be the first jurisdiction in the country to have this.
It would be significant. It would be 16 weeks of family leave. Right now, the district government employees, last year the council passed 8 weeks of family leave. It would be paid for by the businesses who have employees in the district. It would be as much as 1% and significantly less for smaller businesses, but that would provide the money. This study all said that families need to start fresh at the beginning, particularly with newborns, but it would be more than any place else in the country that I know of except the U.S. Navy and the Marine Corps has just, I think, in the middle of the summer, passed a regulation that those folks can have
put 18 weeks. On your wish list, Governor McAuliffe, for
because
the
they're trying to keep women in the services.
But that is likely, well, possibly will happen in the District of Columbia. The council still has to vote on it. There are going to be hearings. The D.C. Yeah. Chamber of Commerce opposes it.
Well, they say they oppose it not because they're not in favor of families, but because it's one more burden on the businesses that are trying to make a profit in the city.
Well, we'll see what happens. Governor McAuliffe, there was another mass shooting last week, this one at a community college in Oregon. It was just a few weeks ago in your state that a gunman killed two former colleagues from a television station in Southwest Virginia on live television. You've stepped up your calls for stricter gun control laws. What would that look like to you?
Well, this is something, Kojo, I've talked about when I ran for governor. I talked about this every day on the campaign trail. I've talked about it every day as governor. We need common sense gun restrictions. And you're talking to someone, listen, I own 3 guns. I'm back taking 2 of my sons hunting tomorrow. We need common sense gun restrictions. I've called for background checks in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I have introduced legislation. Didn't even see the light of day. What they do is it gets buried in a committee early in the morning, and they don't even have a recorded vote. 85% of Americans, if you look at the Pew Research study, supports background checks. I've done it. It takes just a couple minutes. I say 3 of my 5 children are old enough to go into a bar now. They have to hand over their license to go in a bar and drink a beer, and yet they don't have to hand over their license to buy a firearm. 89 deaths per day in the United States of America. So I've called for common sense gun restrictions, background checks. I had an event the other day in Richmond where I talked about on the domestic violence issues. If you are subject to a protective order, you should have your gun removed from you. You should not have a gun because what happens a lot in family situations and intimate partners is that in the heat of the moment, you get mad, and if there's a weapon in the house, likely someone is going to die. So protective orders, domestic stalking, domestic abusers, individuals involved in that should not possess a firearm. I think this is common sense. I'll introduce legislation again. Most Americans, most Virginians, these are common sense. But you know what? This is why, Kojo, elections matter. At the end of the day, The NRA has given a lot of money to a lot of these folks, and they are scared to death of the NRA. It is time to stand up for your constituents and your citizens.
On the subject that most conservative people I talk to about guns say, well, yes, we could maybe agree to have checks so you stop some people from getting guns, but the government would not stop there. The government would find a year later or 2 years later, 10 years later, well, that didn't work well enough. We got to do something else. You got to register the guns across the country or something. They just think that the government will
is ultimately on their right after gun. Their guns.
They're worried about not this, but what would come after that. So, can you respond to that?
Yeah, you could talk about this on any issue. At the end of the day,
that's
if
why
we
people
could
do
have
your Medicare funding, right? Because they were afraid the feds would stick the state with the money and then take billions of dollars.
And that's just not true. They're scared to death of the Tea Party. They're scared to death. Let's cut to the facts here. Many rural legislators have said to me, I'd love to do it, but they're scared of a Tea Party primary. And if they vote for so-called Obamacare, but let's finish up on the gun issue, because at the end of the day, background checks, it's not going to stop. Probably wouldn't have stopped the gentleman up in Oregon. It would not have stopped the individual at Smith Mountain Lake. But at the end of the day, you will be able to stop a significant amount of folks who, if you have a mental illness, Tom, you should not be purchasing a gun. If you've been accused of violent misdemeanors or if you've been accused of domestic abusers and stalkers, this is just common sense. It takes 2 to 3 minutes. That's all I'm asking for is let's have background checks. You can't get 85% of Americans to look at a digital clock and tell you what that says. To have 85% of Americans say this is a common sense thing to do. So I'm just trying. As governor, my job is to grow the economy. My job is also to keep communities safe. If we can take a step that will prevent one death, Tom, one death, we should do it.
Well, what's different about the upcoming election? Of course, we've got an election coming up we've got to talk about. But what gives you any expectation that this will be greeted with any more action in the General Assembly than it has been in the past?
I think since they last met, we had that horrible tragedy at Smith Mountain Lake where those two journalists were killed. Not far from Virginia Tech, the tragedy we had there. You've just had the Oregon shooting. But that's why elections matter. And I'm hoping we get control of the Senate. I'm one seat down, Tom. I need to get one seat. Here in Northern Virginia, we got a great candidates running, Jeremy McPike and Dr. Jill McCabe. Both of those support me on my efforts to have common sense gun restrictions. They're running against opponents who do not support it.
Gabby Gifford, the congresswoman who was shot, and her husband, Mark Kelly, they have an organization, American for Responsible Solutions. They have said they're bringing money into the state. I think they did with your campaign for governor.
They helped me, and I've met with both of them consistently.
Does that matter? Do people remember Gabby Gifford and the horrific nature of that shooting?
They do, and they also remember, and they're also, if they are willing to come in and already get some field organizers out there and go door to door, it's clear. In the two Northern Virginia seats, in the Senate seats, the two candidates running for Democrat both support me on common sense gun restrictions. The opponents they're running against do not.
Can you say their names? Who are the? Can you say their names? Do you know the names?
Is running against Jeremy McPike. Jeremy McPike is the Democrat running, and Dr. Jill McCabe is running against Senator Dick Black.
Both of them
do not support me on common sense gun restrictions. My point is, nor do either of those candidates support me on closing the coverage gap, which would bring $2.4 billion, Tom, back to the Commonwealth of Virginia. Maryland's done it. West Virginia's done it. Kentucky's done it. Arkansas has done it. This is our money. We get to bring it back, provide health care for 400,000
Virginians. In case you're just joining us, our guest is Terry McAuliffe, the governor
the low-key
of Virginia.
Terry McAuliffe.
And you can call to ask him questions or make comments at 800-433-8850 or send email to kojawmu.org. Earlier this week, the Justice Department announced plans to release 6,000 inmates early from federal prisons starting later this month, with more to follow. Results of the new sentencing guidelines for drug crimes, 160 of them will return to Virginia. The restoration of rights to rehabilitated felons is something you've been focusing on. What does Virginia do for returning citizens to ensure that they don't end up back in the system?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I'm very proud to say that we have broken all records on restoration rights. We've just gone over 11,000. You take my first 16 months in office, I've done more than any Virginia governor in their entire 4-year term. More importantly, We used to have a 13-page form that had to be notarized to get your rights back to vote. I've condensed that down to one page. And more importantly, we used to have what I believe is a remnant of the poll tax. You had to pay all your old court fees in order to get your right to vote back. Well, as you know, for many individuals, these court fees have gone up dramatically, the interest costs. So I eliminated that. No longer can court fees be a barrier to you to get your voting rights back. So, you know, I'm hoping by the time I leave office, 20,000 Virginians will have their rights back. Listen, they've paid their price. They've paid their debt to society. You want them back feeling good about themselves. Redemption. We just had the Holy Father here. This is about getting people back into society feeling good about themselves. And if they can't vote, you know, that's not really helping them, putting your hand out. So I'm all about second chances in life. I get so tired sometimes of folks. I want people back in society. I want them productive citizens. So on the restoration of rights, I am all in on that. I have called for in Virginia, and people have, you know, some on the Republican side have absolutely gone over the top. I have said for nonviolent felons, we ought to look. We don't have parole in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Well, when you spend over $1 billion on your system of housing your prisoners, I think as governor, I ought to take a look at it. Luckily, I've looked at all these horrible transportation projects that were done before I became governor to save hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm not saying we're going to change it, but we ought to look at it. Should we have folks who had drug possession be, you know, sitting, we're spending $25,000 a year to have somebody there? I'm not sure that's the best thing we should do, but I'm looking at it. So I think, Kojo, at the end of the day, let's look at the system. Are there people who are sitting there in prison who would be better? We could rehabilitate them as drug possession. You know, if you bounce a check for over $200, that's a felony in Virginia today. So if you got a woman who bounces a check for $250, should she go to prison and we spend $25,000 a year keeping her in prison for that? I'm not sure that makes sense.
Governor, I want to ask, this is a perfect time to bring up the car title loans issue. If you were going to do it, I can do it real quick if you like.
I can do it right now because I have a question right here for the governor. You told WMU 88.5's Michael Pope that you would like to see some kind of limit to the interest rates that these car title loan companies can charge. At that point, you weren't willing to tell him what rate would be appropriate.
Yep.
Are you willing to say now what interest rate would be appropriate? The Center for Responsible Lending and the Virginia Poverty Law Center want to see a cap of 36%. Do you agree with that? Will you commit to that now?
When I did see Michael, and when I've asked my policy team for the next session, I would like to see us do something about these abusive car title loans. You cannot drive down a street, and many in Richmond you drive down. There's two or three in a block. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what year, but recently we had more car title loan stores than McDonald's in Virginia. Now, what does that tell you? So, listen, at the end of the day, we need reasonable lending practices, but you cannot see people who are hurting today, who have to go to one of these places, see that they're in servitude for the rest of their lives. So I am all about looking at this issue. We will come out with some policy initiatives once my team has finished up their report. This is something we need to look at.
You don't know about the 36% cap yet?
Yeah, I'm not willing today to agree. I will be very vocal when I come out and we get with our final analysis on this thing. My session doesn't start, as you know, until January. Before that, you will hear from me on that topic.
Are you still a banker or you're a former banker?
No, I sold years ago.
Okay, so I think you're a former. I started to say former banker, but I wasn't sure that's true. Well, 30, even if you dropped it to 36%, which is what these consumer activists would like to see, I mean, that's still pretty high. I'm thinking
of course it is.
Mortgage loans are less than 4%, fewer, and other kinds of loans are nowhere near 36%.
When it's not only car title, they go, people go on the rent to own these TV sets. They go in and buy a TV set, and you know what you end up paying for a TV is like, you know, eight times what it would have originally cost you.
I have to say, I was paying less attention to this until Michael Pope told me that back in 2011, before 2011, these companies could not operate except in Virginia, and only could seize and do title loans on Virginia cars. But the legislature, the assembly, changed it, and now they can accept titles from Maryland and D.C., and they're lining up on the borders, and they're just doing it to – it's really a horrible economic assault on these people.
Well, and it's assault on the people who can at least afford.
Right.
I mean, they are there because they probably can't go to a traditional bank, which is what I was involved in, where it's, you know, 150 basis points over whatever the lending rates are. You know, so this is something we need to look at. I couldn't agree with you more, and it is something we are looking at.
And maybe by the end of the year you might know what essentially.
Yes, sir. Before the session comes back in. I am now, I've sent a letter to every member of the General Assembly, all 140, that I would like you to come visit me. In fact, I had a couple meetings this morning before I came up here. Everybody's coming in to tell me what their budget, you know, this has never been done before, so I'm letting everybody come in. You get 15 minutes. What would you like to see me? Because my two-year budget I will be presenting on December 17th. I will lay out my two-year budget. So I'm trying to work with everybody in a bipartisan way to figure, you know, what makes sense to grow the economy. The good news is, you probably have seen, I just announced a 4.5% unemployment rate, the lowest of any state in the southeast of the United States of America. And this summer, we just hit more workers in Virginia than any time in our history.
This is your last meeting.
Put on your headphones, please, because we're headed to the phones. Here is Greg in Springfield, Virginia. Greg, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say thank you to the governor. I am one of the people he was just speaking about. I was convicted of a felony for drug possession in 1990, and it affected me for many years. But I petitioned his office and the governor for my rights to be restored, and I'll be voting in my first election in the upcoming election.
Fantastic.
And it means a great deal to me. I've always been involved in politics and been aware and want to be aware of what my surroundings are and what's going on in my world and my kids' world, and it feels very, very good to be able to take part finally. So thank you very much.
Well, congratulations to you. Care to say whether you'll be voting Democratic or Republican in the next election?
I lean Democratic, but I am independent. I try and base my decisions based upon voting records and on the issues that are dear to my heart, and sometimes I'll go one way and sometimes I'll go the other.
But really however you
on
vote.
The issue at hand.
But one thing, Greg, the important that Greg raises here at Kojo, this is a very, very important point. And when we did this, some of the opponents on the other side would say, it doesn't matter. They're not going to go vote anyways. I believe within 1 month of the restoration of rights, the number may have changed, but it was close to 70% immediately went out and registered to vote, which is really spectacular.
Thank you very much for your call, Greg. We got an email from Susan who says, congratulations on the solar system that Amazon is building in Virginia. Virginia is way behind on renewable energy, but you're making progress with solar. Virginia has a great opportunity for offshore wind. The economic development and employment opportunities are great. When will we see utility-scale offshore wind in Virginia?
Great question. Renewable energy, this was another one of my big platforms when I ran for governor. Virginia had really been in the back of the pack, had not even been involved in renewable energy. As you know, Virginia, listen, we have, you know, 28 military installations, the largest naval base in the world, the Pentagon, the CIA. We've become very reliant on the federal government. Sequestration, government shutdown, people have realized we have to build and diversify and bring in new businesses. That has been my focus. I've done 471 projects since I've been governor, about $8 billion of capital investment. Not that anybody's counting, but that's nearly double any governor of Virginia history, so we're really cranking it.
Who does all this counting for you?
Nobody. You just said nobody.
The
no, even he though he has the exact numbers, numbers right?
Saying, I've been to every school. I've been to every church. I've been to every corner hot dog stand.
Well, I don't like to sleep when you're dead, Tom. Well, we have a whole operation that keeps track.
Wow.
But economics, the VEDP.
Wow. Going to put a GPS on you.
But to go into Susan's point
me,
is
go ahead.
Renewable energy is a huge piece. Cybersecurity, the whole proteomics, human genome sequencing, big data. Renewable energy. We are finally in the game. I just did a permit by rule. I just issued it the other day. First 80 megawatt solar field in the eastern shore of Virginia. This is now the biggest in the Mid-Atlantic, the second biggest in the entire East Coast. Amazon has agreed to buy all the juice from it to power their facilities. Amazon has about 11,000 employees in Virginia. And this is important for states because, you know, you want the manufacturing of the solar panels to be done in your state, so it's those jobs. But in addition, Amazon, Microsoft, who I just met with up in Washington State, they're not going to go to a state that cannot produce renewable energy for their facility. So you better get in this game or you won't have those big businesses. The other big piece, as soon as mentioned, is offshore wind, and I'm proud to announce that Virginia was the first state in America to get a federal lease trial to do offshore wind. Dominion Power has just announced the RFP that goes out on that for the bidding process. So we will be the first in the nation to have a federal offshore wind project.
What kind of acreage would that be? How much land?
Well, this first one is just a test site. It'd be about three or four turbines. But then once you get that, then you get the data back, and then you can build a gigantic field. But these solar fields, Tom. In fact, Dominion's just announced they're going to build three or four more of them. You've got a lot of old tobacco field. You got a lot of things that you can convert to renewable energy.
The district government just bought some energy from a wind farm in Pennsylvania.
Great. And pretty soon they'll be able to buy it from Virginia. Before they don't have to go up to Pennsylvania. They can go to their neighbor.
I know you want to get to upcoming elections, but before we get off the energy-related topics, we got a tweet from Eamon, who says, please ask the governor about his stance on the pipeline that is in the process of being approved through Central Virginia.
Yeah. There's actually two pipelines. The big one is the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which I have endorsed. I've worked closely with Dominion. I've worked closely with the landowners to make sure this pipeline is being done in a way that is environmentally protects our great environment and our historical assets. But this pipeline will now give us very cheap gas. I talk about building a renaissance of manufacturing in America. I want to see that in Virginia. Southside, Southwest Virginia, they've lost coal, textile, furniture, tobacco. Great hardworking folks, great workforce. But in order to bring those businesses to Virginia and away from China, which we have done, is through cheap energy. This pipeline will be like a superhighway that you can take a spur off anywhere you want directly to a manufacturing facility to power up that facility. I can now beat anybody in the globe on energy costs. Last year, China, the largest project they have ever done by a company into America, we won that in Virginia. $2 billion, 2,000 new jobs. I'm in the middle of negotiating contracts around the globe. The only reason I'm in the game moving these companies to Virginia is because of this pipeline. We have hundreds of pipelines today in Virginia. This one will be the most environmentally secure and up-to-date technology.
Don't forget you can watch our live video stream at kojoshow.org. Our guest is Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers.
I was just thinking, U.S. Secretary of Commerce, Terry McAuliffe in the Hillary Clinton administration. I'm not sure that would give you enough to do, though.
That by way of taking us to our next topic, politics, right? Yeah. Elections.
I mean, he could be in the, if she were to win. I mean, I'm not sure that would be a big enough job for him, though.
Secretary of Commerce?
Secretary of Commerce.
It would be interesting. I've never worked for anyone in my life.
I know, that's what I'm going to say. You're going to be a little more.
800-433-8850.
Sorry.
Come on.
800-433-8850. What do you think he should be secretary of in another administration? Ed Gillespie, former White House advisor, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, confirmed he'll be running for governor of Virginia in 2017 after your term is up. He chaired the RNC at a time when you served in the same role for the Democrats.
Yep.
You two were counterparts, sparring partners, even went on a national speaking tour together.
Yep.
He might even have drunk beer from that beer. What do you call that thing?
Kegerator. No, he hasn't had any of that yet. But we had, in fairness, we've had a few before that.
What do you think of his bid to succeed you? Have you spoken to him about it?
I have not, and I know Ed very well. He's got to get through. First of all, they're going to have a convention to determine who their nominee is going to be. I read in the paper that Ken Cuccinelli, the gentleman whom I beat, the former attorney general, is interested in possibly running. And with a convention, you don't know what's going to happen in a convention. So Ed certainly doesn't have it. I am very convinced the Democrats will keep the governor's mansion. If we can continue on the economic strides, I mean, we will have rebuilt the economy in Virginia. People, I assume, would be very happy. Ralph Northam, my lieutenant governor, has announced that he's running for governor. But it's not only on the economics. Just last week, as you probably all saw, before I became governor, they had some very onerous regulations towards women. Horrible regulations. Very anti-women, not welcoming, which was not good to create a new economy. They had made the women's clinics, health clinics, under the same standards as hospitals. And at the end of the day, let's be clear, the goal was to shut these women's health clinics down.
We had Barbara Favola on the talking about that. So
you know it well.
Huge subject.
So I have a new Board of Health that I appointed, and after a 10-hour meeting the other day, we removed that restriction. So those women's health clinics who provide care for thousands of women in Virginia are now going to stay open. I think at the end of the day, people are very appreciative that we're fighting for women. I've led the rights on LGBT issues, my executive order number one. I'm the first Southern governor to perform a gay marriage. Sky didn't fall in. You know what I'm trying to do? Open and welcoming to everyone. You want to come to Virginia? You want to start a business? We want you.
Tom Sherwin.
I was looking down my notes. I want to ask about, I've got roads and metro, but this is a national issue. I'm asking it anyway.
Yep.
What the heck's happening on the Hill with these Republicans trying to pick a speaker. There's just nothing like this in any recent American history, 100 years or something.
I got to tell you.
You're a big Democrat, but you look at that. I know one level you could be laughing and saying, hi, they're really messing themselves up. Yep. On the other hand, you've got to be amazed at how bad that is.
Well, I even take it. I'll tell you, I'm disgusted. Forget being a Democrat. I'm talking about being governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia with all of these assets that we have, sequestration. These guys cannot make a decision. So they've kicked the can down the road till December 11th on sequestration. Mm-hmm. We now have the debt ceiling coming up on November 5th. We have a highway trust fund, Tom, that they cannot put permanent financing towards. If this highway trust fund doesn't get done in Virginia, I stop 300-plus projects, $1 billion I lose. These guys have got to get their act together. I'm competing on a global basis every single day. I was probably the most traveled governor. I went to China twice, Korea, Japan last year, 7 European countries. We're competing. And by the inaction in Congress, by doing these, you know, continuing resolutions, I'll be honest with you, it's the same thing as a slow motion sequestration. If Mayor Bowser was here today or even Governor Hogan, they would tell you the same darn thing. This is crippling our area. We need decision makers in Congress, and the partisan political petty politics that is going on in Washington today is really inhibiting our ability to be competitive on a global basis.
Perfect segue into Metro. Metro, I was trying to decide which is worse. I mean, Metro can't seem to get out of its way. A
Correct.
Proposal by the National Transportation Safety Board to let the Federal Railroad Administration.
Transportation Secretary says that's not happening.
Well, yeah, he said it. And then there's apparently some bureaucratic disputes between the railroad people and the highway people. It just sounds like a mess. And I don't see, and everybody's saying, well, Jack Evans was here, I think, last week, and he said he's on the selection committee for a new general manager who's going to kind of come in and grab the reins. But he said he hopes to have that person in place by November. And then the transportation secretary, Mr. Fox, says the state's got to be more aggressive about this. So where are we on Metro? I mean, I had said this morning, you've lost me as a Metro rider. I had now ride Metro once or twice a year because it's easier for me to walk, ride a bike, or take my car than to go on Metro.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable statement when you think
about
the investment.
Thousands of people are doing it.
Yeah, the investment that's been made. But you're right. If you can't get on that train and know it's going to come at a reliable time and drop you off at a reliable time, people have to make decisions on their life. So I've been very vocal on the topic, probably more vocal than
but
most.
But we've been behind the scenes on the topic.
Oh, you bet I have.
Okay,
now, we're a little bit different in Virginia because, remember, I don't pick all the members. As you know, they're picked by the jurisdiction.
That was a big dispute.
Yeah, and that was before me. Nothing I can do about that. However, I've been very clear that I want listen, it's taken them a year to get a general manager. What are you talking about? If you were in private business, you would have been fired by now. It shouldn't take a year. And I want someone who has operational and safety backgrounds. I need a operationally efficient system. We're all investing lots of money in it. We just put up a lot of money for the new 8-car trains, which are important because when the trains come to your station, if they're full, what good is that? We just put some more money in to get some more juice on the Orange Line so they can take the new trains. Here I am sitting here as governor of Virginia. I got the Silver Line, which has transformed Tyson's Corner. You look at the cranes going on out there today in the Reston Wheelie Station. And beginning, as you know, in 2 years, we'll be able to get them out to the airport. I think it's going to be transformational.
You'll get me back as a customer of Dulles. I haven't been to Dulles. Yeah. I can't remember. I think 98 when I went to London.
If you get Metro running properly again?
I will go to Dulles.
Sure,
what
right
I
there.
Don't understand is why is everybody quibbling over oversight when a new general manager hasn't been hired? Because it seems to me that if you hire a new general manager, then that's the point person for every single issue that we're discussing, rather than wondering whether the FTA or the FRA should take the recommendation of the NTSB?
It's the whole management structure. I'm sorry, Governor, you should answer that question. It's the management structure. It's the organized labor structure. It seems the pieces don't fit.
Right. But the key is we have been without a leader for a year. You cannot have an interim GM. It just doesn't work. We need someone in there with direction, and I've been promised by the end of November. They are in the interviewing process. They're down to their short list, so they are interviewing it.
That should leak any time, and that happened in the spring or the winter, and all three candidates backed out.
And do you think this is helpful, to be leaking this inside information about your applicants? Because who's going to want to apply if this is the way you folks operate? So, I mean, I was outraged over that when they leaked all that secret information. I think people said, forget this. I'm not going.
Well, as a member of the journalism world, I wasn't outraged over it. But I'm thinking, given the way things work, leaks occur. And I want someone who can stand up to the leaking. Because the people, once that person, he or she, gets into the job, there will be leaks about what he or she's doing. Leaks are part of the life. Yep. I mean, you have to deal with it.
But go back to Kojo's point. You're right. Let's get the new GM in there. Let's that person, he or she, get their feet wet. Let's determine what we need to do. I told Secretary Fox the other day, you know, listen, I would not be adverse if you, the secretary, wanted to put someone, remember this happened before, if you want to put someone over there from the federal on the management, I'd certainly be open to do that if he wanted to do that. I'm working very closely with Secretary Fox. I'm trying to get higher speed rail from D.C., all the way down Fredericksburg, Richmond, then into Charlotte. He and I are working very closely on that. So, you know, he's in the game on this stuff. And he had the three of us, you know, in a meeting in his office, and he was not happy.
Right. Well,
a couple of other issues I need to get to. Why are they talking?
I think the passengers should do a one-day strike and a million people stay home and tell the government to fix it.
Stay with transportation, and believe you me, we have a lot of calls and tweets and emails. I will get to you, but while we're on transportation, I-66, it could get 10 miles of so-called hot lanes, that's high-occupancy toll lanes, inside the Beltway. What would that mean, and how are those different from express lanes? And what will they generate money for?
Yeah. In 66, let me tell you, when I ran for governor, I talked about this a lot. It is a parking lot.
It is.
People are going to stop moving to our region. Folks, if they can't go see their kids play a ball game, it takes 2 hours each way. So we have come up with a plan to deal with 66. Some of the people on the other side, the Republican leadership the other day, had a press conference. They have no plan. They just want to sit and complain. I got elected to be a problem solver. They're problem creators. I'm having a plan. So what we're going to do, phase one, outside the Beltway, as you know, Kojo, we're going to add two new express lanes on each side. In addition to those three lanes that they have, in addition, we are going to leave space in the middle so that ultimately for transportation, maybe metro in the future. I'm trying to think long term. I'm trying to build a more multimodal system. We need more parking garages so people can park and get on our mass transportation or get on a bus. Inside the Beltway, what we are proposing to do right now, non-rush hour, you can do it, everyone go, no one pays anything. If you presently go on at HOV2, it will be the same. It's not going to change. So they all talk about, well, my constituents are going to have to pay a toll. No, the only one that is effective, you're on it illegally today. We're going to give you an option. We'll have a hot lane in the middle. And if you want to pay for that as a single driver, which will alleviate traffic on other roads, and the monies generated have to stay there to reduce congestion and go towards multimodal activities. This, I think, is something we need to look at. And then 5 years or whenever we get done, we look at it. If indeed widening of 66 inside the Beltway is warranted, then we'll have the statistics to do it. We have studied 66 for 15 years. Republicans say, let's have another study. Studies mean nothing. And then you're just going to delay it for you. I am here to solve problems. I am making decisions. That's what the Commonwealth elected me to do.
Got to go to the phones. Here's Teresa in Springfield, Virginia. Teresa, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. First off, thank you, Governor, for supporting early intervention for autism services in Virginia. Now we need some adult services attention.
Yep.
You know, we're 48th in the nation on funding for social services, and we're 8th in the nation in wealth.
Yep.
We've got some Medicaid waiver redo coming up. What commitment are you going to make to adult services, especially in light of the Department of Justice calling Virginia back into court for not meeting their settlement agreement? And how can you help us in the next legislative session fund more waiver services for adults? Thank you.
Great question. Number one, as she alluded to, we are under court order by the Department of Justice to close these facilities down. This happened before I became in. We're now dealing with the effects of that ruling. The DOJ has been very angry at the speed that we're doing it. So this is something we, with my Secretary of Health, Bill Hazel, we are on top of now. Additional monies, as Teresa mentioned, we are 48th. This goes back to the point I raised earlier about closing the coverage gap in Virginia. Every Virginian who's listening on this radio should understand that we are forfeiting about $2.4 billion a year. we would cover 400,000 individuals. Within that money is hundreds of millions of dollars for those that have severe mental illness. I tried to push this last year. They didn't give it to me. General Assembly, Tea Party scared them, and they wouldn't do it. I then came up with the Governor's Access Plan, where I put up funds from the state to cover 22,000 individuals with severe mental illness. That could have been 100% paid for through the Medicaid expansion. We forfeit, this is important, in the two-year budget that I'm going to propose, and I'll have an exact number soon, anywhere from $250 to $400 million I could save our budget by closing the coverage gap. Folks, I can use that money, Teresa, to help us with these IDD waivers. I can use this money for pre-K initiative through K through 12 spending. This is real money. And these 400,000 Virginians today are still going to the hospital. Who do you think is paying the bill? You are. You have now paid twice. That's why almost every Chamber of Commerce supported my efforts. It is time to stop the partisan politics. I can do this in a manner that not one financial obligation would run to the Commonwealth. We can bring this money back, create 30,000 new jobs, and do the right thing for the citizens of Virginia.
In addition to Teresa, we got a tweet from the original G who says, can you ask the governor to explain what Medicaid expansion means to Virginians? He has done that. We got an email from an individual who is named Virginia who said, lack of health care kills people too. Where does that stand in Virginia now? There are lives in the balance. She's talking about Medicaid expansion. And in addition to Teresa, we got a call from Bonnie in Annapolis, Maryland, who says, in reference to mental illness, where will they draw the line?
Yeah. And this is a good point. And Tom goes back to your question. You know, they all ask about gun control.
Right.
So they immediately come back to us and say, well, it's not gun control. It's mental illness. Well, let me be clear. The same people who have thwarted my efforts to get common sense gun restrictions are the same people who thwart me on putting more money into mental illness. You can't have it both ways. So let's do the right thing. And the last thing I'll say, we have elections in 3 weeks in Virginia. I hope every single person who is listening is going to vote or make sure they get an absentee ballot. You can actually go on right now and sign up and get an absentee ballot. You can go to our Department of Elections website and do it.
But you mentioned two races earlier, four races earlier. Those are Senate races?
Those two I mentioned before are the Senate races. Basically, there are about six races in play totally, and the closest we have today, we've got Gary McComb running down in the Virginia Beach area. We have Jill McCabe up here running against Senator Black. We have a pickup opportunity. Dan Gecker is running down in the Richmond area. Those are our real pickup opportunities. We have to protect Chuck Colgan's seat, which is where Jeremy McPike is running. It's a district I won by about 18 points. It's up here. We got to make sure that we get people out to vote.
But you're not going to have the House. You may win the Senate.
No, no.
So you're still going to have
a lot of
work
with one chamber.
With one chamber.
But there's some interesting things that have happened in Virginia. There was a lawsuit filed on the congressional map.
Right.
And guess what? The court has just appointed a special master. It is my belief that the entire state will be redrawn. This gerrymandering has done more to damage democracy in our nation. That is at the root of the problem. That's why I've always supported nonpartisan independent. So I believe you'll see Democrats pick up 2 to 3 more Democrats next year in 16 because of this. In addition,
you made a specific proposal. You presented one of the 11 proposed
fixes. I think mine's the best, Kojo.
Sent to the court, and you argue that yours should be considered. You say merely tinkering with the boundaries is not enough. But in response, Republicans say your plan is race-based, which redraws the entire state to favor Democrats.
No, we could pick up another African-American member of Congress, possibly. I don't know. It ain't race-based. I'm just looking at numbers. And what I want is lines that geographically make sense. And I would love, Kojo, races that are 50-50. There is no competition. When 90% of members of Congress win every 2 years, guess what? We have the mess we have in Washington today. The only way they can beat them is a primary. And the Tea Party will, you know, terrifies many of the folks in the Republican Party who got to run in these low turnout primaries. Scares the daylights out of them.
Your turn, Tom.
I want to go back to transportation because if someone who lives in Georgetown emailed me this week and he said, talking about all the roads and the toll roads in Virginia, he says, why don't a lot of those cars come into D.C., into and out of D.C. every day, hundreds of thousands of them? Why can't the city have toll roads? And then that would encourage people to go on Metro if we had toll roads into the city.
Well, I'm not in the habit of telling Mayor Bowser what to do with her city.
I think Congress won't allow the city to have toll roads.
Yeah,
and
well, if she wants to lead that battle, I'll let her do it.
You could have the easy pass lane on 14th Street. You wouldn't be stuck coming in or going out.
Well, I'm looking at options on 395.
Let me answer it for the governor. We're not going to talk about that because I'm not for it.
I got enough issues in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I got 8.4 million citizens I worry about every day. I got my hands full.
Let's talk school openings. Make sure here's we're Paul in Falls Church, Virginia. Paul, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Cordial, thank you so much for taking my call. Governor, as someone who is also from the Syracuse area, I normally think you operate with a lot of common sense, but for the life of me, I can't understand why you continue to support the state not allowing local school districts when to start the school year. What happens in places like Fairfax, Alexandria, Falls Church, Arlington, they end up wasting time in the month of June because all the AP tests, et cetera, national tests are all over with. The kids get out of school almost the end of June, and it's because the state will not allow local school districts to start their school year before Labor Day. And it's known as the King's Dominion Law. People can take vacations in June just as well as they can Labor Day weekend. So, Governor, please, can you change your mind on this?
Well, Paul, you haven't been reading the news. Just the other day, I just authorized a bunch more jurisdictions to do longer school year. I've already done that. I've said I am open to looking at anything that helps us in education. Already we allow jurisdictions, if they make the case, they can do that. They can do that today. They can apply for a waiver. I've never turned one down. So I'm open to looking at it. And I want to be very data-driven, too. Now, what Paul mentions is the King's Dominion Law is to have enough workers in our, you know, our King's Dominion and in the parks that we have, because it is a huge economic driver for tourism. So balancing both. If a school jurisdiction says that, you know, they got to have them, they show the empirical data, it will help their students, of course I'd be interested in looking at that. We just did it in Petersburg last year. We authorized it. And I got to tell you, AP Hill Elementary School, for years and years and years, had not been able to make their state accreditation. They did do, when I say school year, it's a longer year. Guess what? They just made state accreditation. So I am open to looking at anything to build the best K-12 system in the country.
I know you compete with Maryland for business and different things, but have you had much contact with Governor Hogan? I know he's been ill, but you've met with him a couple times with the Fox, with the Secretary.
We have. We have. Yeah, I saw
Chesapeake.
Him.
What did I see him Foundation, Chesapeake Foundation, a couple of several
he
months
didn't come,
ago.
He didn't come to that, right. Oh, but I did see him on the sidelines of the Redskins for the Miami Dolphin game. He and I were both there for the pregame activity. But he's been in, I think, today or something is his last chemotherapy term. So I assume once he's through that, we'll see him more. But we haven't, because I've really been trying to get our three jurisdictions together. You know, before Mayor Gray and Governor O'Malley and I, you know, we met quite a bit, you know, to get folks together on the different issues. But obviously our thoughts and prayers are with the governor, and we've got to get through this very important. He's got a state to run.
Is anything bigger than Metro at this moment for the three jurisdictions? I mean, everything's big, but anything bigger than?
I think it's Metro is probably the biggest we're dealing with. Governor Hogan and I, obviously, looking at what we do, I'm very concerned about the American Legion Bridge, which is your main thoroughfare between Maryland and Virginia.
It's running out of time.
It's running out of time, and we can't keep waiting on this thing. So looking at all of our different options as regards to, you know, our major congestion points in the Commonwealth, because we've got the beautiful new hot lanes that come in, as you know, and then they come to Route 193, and then it's like a funnel.
Hot lanes, yes, but we got an email from Boyd in Alexandria who says, my friend Danny Pluffer or Plower has been working hard to bring high-speed rail to Virginia.
Yes, he has. Yep.
How can we do this and make it easier to get around Virginia by rail?
Yeah, and he's exactly right, and we've been working very hard. In fact, I just had my Secretary of Transportation, Aubrey Lane, go down to Florida to meet with the CEO of CSX. What we're trying to do, what the options we're looking at, is to establish another, give them another freight line where we have dedicated times on it. The key, as Tom mentioned before, is being able to get on it and get off. Today, we share them with the freight cars, and listen, they own the line, so they have priority. If we can get a new line and have a dedicated times with higher speed rail, and Secretary Fox, we're just fortunate he was the mayor of Charlotte. He wants to see this go all the way from Washington down to Charlotte. I mean, that's great for our jurisdiction. So I'm hoping by the time I leave office, we can announce, and it would be higher speed. We won't get high speed, as you know. There's not the money to do that, but higher speed with dedicated times, I think, will be terrific.
Can I ask about the minimum wage?
Please do.
The federal minimum wage is $7.25. people have talked about raising it. The president has and others. It hasn't gone up. The district has a minimum wage that will be $11.50, I think, next year. Prince George's County, Montgomery County have higher minimum wages. Virginia and the counties are still sticking with the federal wage. Does that hurt you in your state trying to track all the business you're talking about? Or does that help? And do you think it ought to go up? And if so, to what?
Yeah. We do file 27 states. Around
about half the states.
Yeah, half the states file the federal standard. They're not going to legislatively change that. I can tell you that today.
That's a non-starter in Virginia.
Absolutely. Okay. Just non-starter.
And the counties don't have the authority to do it.
No, sir. Well, no. We have the old Dillon rules, you know.
Yes, the Dillon rule. Who was Dillon? Do you know?
Yeah, I used to know when I was campaigning.
I'm going to look it up.
We got an email from Michael who identifies himself as an Uber driver. What's the governor's view on Uber and Lyft operations in the Commonwealth? Washington was one of the first cities to embrace and welcome Uber and Lyft. Virginia, not so much, says our email.
Who says that?
Email from Michael. He says he's an Uber driver.
Okay, well, Virginia led the way. In fact, this was a very contentious issue. I took it as soon as we got it. And we worked with our Department of Transportation. We changed our whole framework to allow Uber to come in. In fact, Uber sent out a worldwide email thanking the governor of Virginia. So we were right in front, and they actually used the framework we did in Virginia now for the other states around the country. So I'm a huge supporter of Uber and Lyft, and any of these new technologies, we need to be at the forefront.
Michael, it turns out that wasn't the gotcha question I thought it was, and we're just about out of time. Quick memory question. We only have about 50 seconds left. You have also been a business person since the age of 14.
Yes, sir.
I know the answer to this question. What business did you launch back then?
McAuliffe Driveway Maintenance, started sealing driveways. Then we got into parking lots. If you read my New York Times best-selling book on my life called What a Party, you have pictures
driveways.
Of the truck I had when I was 15. I didn't even have a license yet, but I was an entrepreneur.
I thought those sealing driveway guys were the ones you're supposed to stay away from. They're the same ones that sell wood in the winter.
Especially when they're, they're 14 years old.
Yeah, but you know what? I took the money from that and bought snowblowers for the winter. So we used to, you know, Syracuse had a lot of snow.
Terry McAuliffe, he is the governor of Virginia and the proud owner of the Kegerator. He's a Democrat who previously served as chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Always a pleasure. Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button and thanks.